Welcome into the Pokes Report Podcast. Zach Lancaster here alongside Brian Murphy. Brian is down in the city. We're doing this long distance because...
No. We are multi-state today, Zach.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm in Fort Worth, Texas today.
Well, I wasn't wrong. I just said the city.
The Fort Worth city.
Yeah, you're in the city. So you're down in the Lone Star State doing a little work.
Down here spying on TCU, should we need that information later on in Arlington.
So what you're telling me, before we got on, you were like, can you hear this? And you were crunch, 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 crunch. You're like, I just killed some chips and queso. So you had some really good chips and queso.
Rosa's Cafe Tortilla Factory. It's one of those places where they'll make the tortillas right there in front of you.
You can get that at Mexico Joe's, man. Goodness.
Yes. Same setup. I need to get over to Mexico Joe's. I've not been there in forever. Mike, CJ or Tilly, one of the two was asking me about that, if I'd ever been to Mexico Joe's, and I said, I have. It's been a long time. Need to go back.
Well, you let me know next time you're going to Mexico Joe's, and you and I will get together and we will
crunch chips and queso.
And then when we get done, we'll record a podcast. How about that?
Ooh, I like that.
That's a twofer.
That sounds good.
That's a twofer. So we got a lot to dig into. First and foremost, this news came out today. It's the least surprising news that we've gotten in quite some time because we've known this for quite some time. But we're going to go ahead and just lead off with it. Bedlam is back, baby. Oklahoma State and Oklahoma announced Bedlam basketball. It's official now. We've known for months that they were going to play on December 14th, and it's official now. It's going to be at the Paycom Center down in Oklahoma City. There is a new title sponsor for the Bedlam rivalry series. This is how they say it. The people of Oklahoma Oil and Natural Gas. That they have it listed in the release twice, but I'm assuming it's probably just... The Oklahoma Oil, I assume it's just Oklahoma Oil and Natural Gas.
Okay.
But they're the new title sponsor, but it'll be on Saturday, December 14th. It's a non-conference men's basketball game coming up, and you can start buying tickets on September 18th, Wednesday, September 18th. So be sure to get your tickets because it'll be a lot of fun. I don't know how many you've been to, but I like the... non-campus neutral sites for Oklahoma State sports. It gives it a fun kind of a travel ball feel. Like when I was coming up playing basketball and baseball and stuff like that, like going to a neutral tournament, you know, I thought that was always a lot of fun. And so that's what you're going to get on December 14th.
I have been to the Paycom Center a lot. I have seen OSU there. It is fun. I would prefer these to be home and home. I'll be honest.
I think you. I think moving forward, it will happen. I think this is.
I hope so.
I think to me, it feels like this is the first year that we haven't had Bedlam. It's a non-conference. Let's do a neutral. Let's make it a big deal, and. I'm going to assume that starting next year, you're back to home and home. Because, one, it goes back to the conversation that you and I have had for months and months. It makes too much sense for the Olympic sports it makes too much sense for them to play, right? It's revenue. Sure. One less non-conference slot that you have to fill. And you're gonna pack out either stadium, whether you're in Norman, whether you're in Stillwater. But to me, this feels like... Yeah, it's the first one. We've got a big venue. We're going to play it in the city. It'll be a big to do, and then moving forward, we'll be on site.
Yeah, and it'll probably be dependent on how many people show up to Oklahoma City. If it's a good crowd, they'll probably leave it there. I mean, money ultimately will talk in all of this. From the romantic side, the historical side. I kind of would like for it to be campus, so I'm hoping that it gets back to there, but it will be good to play them in everything but football. However, this would be the year to want to play OU, because much like my text to you at 12:54 p.m. on Saturday regarding our game, we were at roughly halftime. I think it was halftime of our game. Speaking of OU, woof. And that's a direct quote from the only word that was sent in a text message.
Woof. Before we move on, the Paycom Center holds roughly 18,200 for basketball games. Over or under 15,000 fans for this game?
Under.
I think so, too. I think OSU fans care about it, you know, and I think to an extent, I think OU fans care about it. I don't know. I don't know if you'll clear 13, right? Because even Bedlam's in Stillwater, you know, you're not filling up Gallagher. And the fact that it's not in Stillwater, I think you'll have less Oklahoma State fans going to the game. Not less than OU, but just less in general. And so I think to me I would put it like 8 to 10. And I think I would be surprised. Not saying that they can't, but I think I would be surprised if it was more than 10,000.
Right. I don't know, man. I could see 10 to 12. I think that's a decent range. So I'll take the over on your prediction. I'll take the under on the line, and be happy right there. 10 to 13,000.
Sure, sure. I've talked about it ad nauseum for the last 3 days. So I want to get your thoughts on the arc.
So
we'll start first half, and then we'll obviously move to second.
Well, what's funny, and I just thought about it right as you were calling a little bit ago, to set this up. I coach my son's baseball team for the season. I mean, I coach my son's baseball team. We're 11-year-old pitch, you know, kid pitch. We're still in that. You never know who's going to show up. What type of my team is going to show up? Are we going to be just come out and crush the ball? Or are we going to come out and not get any hits against a not very good pitcher?
Well, and so, let's be honest, Brian, you're still in that. Did every kid remember to bring their glove and cleats phase of life?
We are close to that. Yes. So last night in our game, I was Sam Pittman. The first half of our game, we were up 8-2. And I mean, we couldn't do anything wrong. Couldn't do a thing wrong. They got strung a few hits. They get some runs. Cool. Kind of like OSU. Strung a few things together. Got a pick six. But really, Arkansas goes into their locker room not worried about that pick six at all. Mm-hmm. They are rolling. They're doing anything they want offensively. Really, they're doing anything they want defensively whenever. And I don't remember if it was halftime. It was at some point. Our defense had as many yards on that pick six as our offense had total for the game. And, you know, they're walking in there, chests out, feeling great. And then the second half happens. And all of a sudden, they're leaving the stadium going, shaking their head, looking left and right. What just happened? You know, because as good as it went for them in the first half, is as bad as it went for them in the second half. And I remember Mac Brown saying forever ago, OSU, and I want to say it was Gundy's first year as coach, Oklahoma State went to Texas. We were winning like 35-7 at half. And the joke was that like they went and woke up Vince Young and they were like, hey, we actually do need you for this game. And then he went Superman like the second half. But Mac Brown went in there and he goes, guys, this is a story at least I heard. Guys, they can't play any better. We can't play any worse. So let's just go kick off the second half and play better and we'll be fine. And it seems like that's kind of what happened. Now, OSU is going to say, hey, we adjusted all these things, and I have no doubt they did.
Yeah.
Made adjustments, you know, started keeping a spy, started keeping Green, their quarterback, in check a little bit more. The middle of the field was still wide open in the second half. It just – Arkansas would do something really well. They'd get a big gain and then do something really dumb, like a big penalty, we'd get a sack or a holding or turnover, for, you know, turnover on downs, stuff like that. So as well as they did in the first half, they were that bad in the second half. And OSU, to our credit, to Coach Gundy and the staff and the team's credit, took advantage in the second half. It's not that Arkansas kept screwing up and then we just didn't take advantage. We did a good job of using the opportunities, using the turnover for scoring, stuff like that.
Yeah, and I want to – absolutely. You know, I don't want to take anything away from, you know, from Oklahoma State. I Arkansas really struggled. You know, I think the fact that you're – I want to say it was Robert. I think if you had to pick an MVP, I mean, obviously you're looking on the field, but if you're talking total, I mean, it would be Rob Glass. I mean, Talen Green faded fast when you got into that third quarter. You know, you've all of a sudden you've got defensive adjustments. You're chasing them all over the field. You know, he's having to make plays. Jaquindon Jackson gets banged up there late. You know, and he's got to miss some pretty significant snaps. And I not that was the deciding factor, but I mean it played a huge role. You know, Oklahoma State just being able to outlast teams, and we've seen that in the past. You know, now I will give credit where credit is due. The coaching staff made adjustments on both sides of the ball. The offense started to come alive, and I think you can play that off of defensive adjustments, and they started playing well. And there is absolutely no doubt. I don't want to say absolutely no doubt, but in my mind, if Arkansas doesn't muff that punt, I don't know if Oklahoma State wins the game. That was such a massive turning point for Oklahoma State. I mean, momentum was already going towards Oklahoma State's way. But then you get one of the punt team running into the receiver and muff punt, you recover it. I think that led to a field goal. And then the Oklahoma State's next drive was a touchdown. And all of a sudden, the game's over. You know, and so it's...
Speaking of that punt, I'm not sitting here. I don't want to accuse OSU of doing anything nefarious. I don't want to bring anything up that we might be doing something that could be bending the rules. But earlier in the game, that exact same thing happened and the guy fell just short of the returner. I'm not saying that we're sticking a foot out and tripping people, but the same guy in the same spot caught a punt earlier in the game, and they're one of their blockers, you know, on the outside, on the offense, you'd call it the gunner. You know, I don't know what the gunner blocker.
Yeah.
I don't know what he would be on the,
I'm pretty sure it's Gunner Gundy.
Gunner. He's down at Emporia.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But so if we're doing something last second that is causing one of their players to go towards the punter, it's genius. As long as a yellow flag doesn't come flying in, keep it on the up and up. But yeah, if you can send somebody at their return guy, that's one more guy who's, if you're looking straight up in the air and all of a sudden people are closing in on you and one guy goes out of your field of vision towards your feet, it's going to mess with you. And so that is where having the Hudson Cox, the ability to, he doesn't do a full on spiral or a full on end over end. It's a real slow one. And so it knuckles up there a little bit. And that's it's shown to be, since Tom Hutton days, tough to catch.
Well, I mean, their toilets flow backwards. So there's definitely something with with rotation and Aussies. And I go back to it. I mean, no question. I mean, Arkansas, they had the game plan. And here's I think one thing that you have to get circled is the fact that every team moving forward now has that game plan. How do we hurt Oklahoma State? Okay, well, we'll just mimic exactly what Arkansas did. Now,
not every team has Green at their quarterback position.
No, and that's true. I mean, and if you look at the athletes, Arkansas had some really good receivers, Jaquindon Jackson, good running back. And I will say this, Arkansas was not planning for Pine Bluff. There's no way Arkansas game planned and practiced in fall camp and throughout the spring for Pine Bluff. Hey, we got Pine Bluff on the schedule. You know, they're looking at Oklahoma State tape. Now, are they going to struggle throughout the rest of the year? I think so. I've looked at the schedule, and, you know, we've done it on the afternoon sports drive, and I think you're looking at 6 wins with maybe stealing a 7th. I think they have LSU in Fayetteville. That would be...
Go ahead.
Just going to say that. I mean, as good as Arkansas was, I think it was just... I think they schemed really well. They do have athletes. I'm not taking anything away from them. They were a really good football team in that first half. They outcoached Oklahoma State. And the second half, I mean, Oklahoma State is a second half team. They're going to have to get it figured out. You know, I don't think you can survive by doing what they did in the first half and then thinking they're going to be able to bounce back every single time in the second half. But Arkansas schemed for months for Oklahoma State. And I think that plays into it some. Now, that may be that I think that has the chance of being probably the most athletic team Oklahoma State faces. You know, Utah is going to give them a run for their money, but not the Big 12 teams Oklahoma State's going to be facing. They're not as athletic as Arkansas. It's just
And
Oklahoma State just got lucky that they weren't as good.
Mm-hmm. Well, and on the flip side to the Arkansas, you know, you were saying guys are going to have that, or other teams are going to have that film and that, okay, hey, this is the way to get at Oklahoma State. Well, Arkansas is going to, the people that they play are going to see in the second half, when we really started getting pressure on Green and getting somebody in his face, he did not throw the ball well.
No, he did not.
He threw it really well when he was back there by himself. But the very first, one of the first times that we got really good pressure on him, Oliver, unfortunately, probably broke a foot or, you know, whatever happened. But got pressure on him, hit him, and we got a pick six going the other way. And it was, you could almost see if he had a clean pocket, Jay and I were standing there, we go, uh-oh. But if we got pressure on him, their coaches were going, uh-oh. So that was a big turning point, was actually getting pressure on Green and kind of letting him mess up, like at that point. But have you gotten any, and yeah, I'm sure you guys have talked about it, but have you gotten any, or have you heard Robert talk to somebody, has anybody cleared up anything that happened in the last 2 minutes of the game? Or is it just the refs screwed it up that bad that nobody's going to talk about it?
So I still am relatively unclear on the timing situation.
That one I know exactly what happened.
I was going to say, like, not that I don't understand it, but in terms of trying to explain it. Now, like, Robert is, like, they were, that was right. They got that correct. Now,
the timing?
If there was or there wasn't 3 seconds difference, I mean, they tied it up with 2 seconds left.
Yeah.
But
so here's exactly how it went out. I mean, I went back and watched it. I saw it live, actually, because from our seats directly over the end of that play is the play clock down in the, southeast end zone.
Yeah.
And as soon as he went down, I saw it go to 25. And I went, well, that's not right. So I went back and rewatched. The play was over at 1:31. It was done. Ollie's down. The referee has the ball. So the play clock doesn't restart until the referee sets that ball, and we're now on the next play. That should have gone to 40. That didn't happen. So they went back and they reset it at 1:34, and then we're trying to run the 40 from there, and then we had the false start at like 59.
Yeah.
Or the alleged false start, the offside / false start conundrum was at 59 seconds, which if we were at the 1:31, we could have run it all the way down to 51 and run the next, you know, and still run that next play. Or I think it was fourth down. So, you know, call the timeout, kick the field goal with, what is that, 51 seconds. Mm-hmm. So you're kicking off to Arkansas with 48. Call it a 3 second play there.
Yeah.
So,
the offside, like, that is where I think more of the frustration should come from, the alleged offside false start debacle. because Oklahoma State's done that before, and it's an offsides. And that's where Mike was like, I don't have anything against these SEC officials or officials in general. I've got a problem with the head of officiating, because if you have different rules in different conferences, because he was like, we've had officials all fall camp, and we did that all fall camp, and it was never an issue. It was an offsides. But if we go to the SEC and they're calling it a false start, you know, and that's where he started joking. Like, if I know the speed limit before I start driving and I get pulled over, it's my fault. But if I'm driving and I don't know the speed limit, and I get pulled over for speeding, is it my fault? You know, if you don't know what's going to be called, then it's hard to kind of operate. So they do need to get that figured out.
Yeah, no doubt. Bowman had a good game, I thought. I mean, he had a really good second half. And that teardrop pass, the back foot, just throw it up there and Brennan Presley run right underneath it. Then he does the guns thing, which, okay. But that was one pretty pass.
Yeah, Bowman has looked good. I mean, not the best stats, right? I mean, I think it was like 56% completion. Only throws the one touchdown, but
technically had three, but like two came back.
That's true. And, you know, and one thing what's funny about that is I asked Jake Schultz, and I don't know if he was uncomfortable or if that's just the typical fullback type of answer, but I was like, you know, you get the, you know, your penalty gets a touchdown erased off the board. Is it like refreshing, reassuring? You know, is it, you know, what goes into your big play that led to a score? And he was like, I don't really care about it, to be honest with you. I don't care about me. I don't care about the penalty. I'm going to do everything I can to help the team win, and that's all that matters. And I'm like, well, I wanted a better sound bite, but I appreciate your willingness.
But most fullback answer ever.
Yeah, what, a Malcolm back in town or something? Goodness. No, but what's crazy, and I'm going to – it didn't get done last week. It was a weird week. It was a crazy week, and so I wasn't able to get it done. But I'm going to – I'm bringing back the over-under article on Pokes Report. And one of my over-unders, and no one better steal this, I swear to God. If I see this on a website before Friday, I'm going to lose it. Is going to be over under passes to a fullback tight end.
Right.
Josh Ford, 3 receptions. Jake Schultz, 1 reception. Tyler Foster, 1 reception. Josh Ford had 3 targets. Jake Schultz had 1 target. And then Tyler Foster had 2 targets. So I'm looking at, you know, it's going to be over under like 5 catches or something for the tight end fullback, because when it was there, it worked really well. Or I'm going to go over under 1 touchdown reception.
Right. Yeah, I think if you do, you know, right now they're 5 catches, 2 games, so that's 2.5 a game. That's a pretty good line. Are they going to go, you know, are we going to do it more? Or are we going to do it less? And for your inaugural over-under on this one, I'm going to say next game, I'm going to take the over of 2.5, though. I'm not going 3.5, 4, 5. I'm not going 5. I would go over 2.5, though.
For catches?
Yes.
And the only reason I say 5 is because they had 5 in this game. I think that, and obviously it's all going to depend on, you know, what the defense has given you. And when you get to the second half, obviously Arkansas was given the looks. You know, you do a reverse flea flicker to Jake Schultz, you know, and what's funny, there's a TikTok account, and I can't remember the name to save my life, but it's so funny. He's just like that boy running like he's got $42 in change and quarters in his pockets. and he's fast. I think Bowman said it after the game. Deceptively, Jake Schultz is one of the faster of the players on the offense.
He was booking it, man. He was getting after it.
Yeah, and had that safety, you know, had he taken like 2 degrees less on that angle, Schultz is gone. That's a touchdown right there. But I think that when I look at Tulsa, Tulsa is not, and someone asked me yesterday, they were like, well, would you take the over under on the score line? And I was like, I would probably take the over. Oklahoma State is a really good football team. Yeah, they struggled last week, but Tulsa, this isn't going to be like 21. That Tulsa team in 21 that came to Stillwater was a much better Tulsa team than what they are right now. And I don't think Tulsa has what it takes on the defensive side of the ball. Because if you look at corners and safeties, I mean, they're not that big on the back end. And I think you're going to see, the height from, you know, Talon Shetron, Dejon Stribling, Rashad Owens, and then that's where you're going to see some of these bigger fullbacks, tight ends get thrown into the mix. So I would probably take the over on tight end fullback receptions.
Yeah, and Kevin Wilson has coached a long time. He knows offense. The guy can coach offense. So they're going to have some schemes for this. They're not going to, you know, see this and just go, well, we're done. They're going to figure some stuff out. I think ultimately where Oklahoma State's going to dominate is on the line, both sides, offense, defensive line.
I agree.
And if the offensive line, if they will figure out, if they would just listen to the Poke Sport podcast the last 2 years.
Tell them what they need to do, Brian.
Stop doing the zone run scheme. Stop it. The fact that we went into this last game, Mike said, you know, Coach Gundy said, we were in the first half, we were running within 12-yard box. The field is 53 wide. We were only running in 12. How did you even walk in through the week and go, yeah, this is a good idea? Like this worked against our scout team, so it's got to work against Arkansas. What? You know, and so then all of a sudden in the second half, oh, now we're going to the outside. Oh, who would have thought that, like, actually moving the line and getting people downfield blocking would help? Who would have thought? But so I think that's where we will dominate. Another thing that was shocking in the first game against South Dakota State, we saw that diamond formation.
Yeah.
Quarterback to a fullback tight end on each side of him, Ollie behind him. We didn't see that one time. There was not one play called in that formation during the Arkansas game. I don't get how you just scrap stuff like that, especially since in the South Dakota State game, it went for two touchdowns.
Yeah.
I don't know how you scrap that. Casey Dunn has it called. So, you know, I don't know. But hopefully stuff like that comes back. That I bet is going to be a major emphasis this game, is to really show, hey, we're running again and you better fear that, you know, kind of deal. So,
well, listen,
I think Ollie has a big game this week.
I'm just saying it now, sports fans, if you see what Brian is talking about on Saturday, that confirms what we already know to be true.
Well, yes.
But it confirms that the coaching staff listens to our podcast. So one of the probably the most fun storylines about this entire game. And before, you know, we'll talk a little defense and then we'll get out of here. Because I want to talk Obi Ezogbo. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
But for me,
and then, hey, before we get out of here and you got a radio show, we need to hit the around the Big 12. I forgot about that.
Yeah, we'll get that done. Yep. So real fast then, probably the coolest storyline going into this game is Brennan Presley. He's going back home. Mm-hmm. He's from, you know, he's from the Tulsa area. He's got his brother Braylon on the other side. And he said it kind of, you know, jokingly. I think he had a smile on his face. I didn't go to the player availability. I had stuff I had to get done, and Robert covers that for us. And he was like, you know, put him. If he's a punt returner, I want to be on the kick team. You know, I want to go against Braylon. And I think that's going to be such a fun matchup, because you look at Tulsa, and there are a lot of athletes from around the country on that team, but there are a ton of Tulsa and Oklahoma athletes. Yep. You've got Gavin Potter, one of those wildly infuriating linebackers that you just hate to go up against, but if he's on your team, then, you know, you'd go to war with him.
Right.
Obviously Braylon, and there's a few others that I just can't figure out off the top of my head, but Tulsa's a very local team Obviously, Oklahoma State does well recruiting the state of Oklahoma and has for a while, and there's going to be a ton of Oklahoma State fans. So this is I enjoy games like this because you're going to get a lot of Oklahoma flavor coming on Saturday.
Well, and Gundy talked about it, that the quarterback, Kirk Franklin.
Kirk Francis, that's right. Yeah, he is Francis, an Oklahoma kid.
He is. He's from Tulsa, and that Oklahoma State wanted him to come over, as I'm sure at that time it was probably still called a preferred walk-on, but to come over and walk on, and Tulsa extended a scholarship to him, rightly. He took, you guys want to pay for my school? I will render my services to you.
Well,
so he became their quarterback, but you know, and I think that that's where it gets interesting. Like you said, these kids are probably all kids that got overlooked by Oklahoma State, an Oklahoma State type school, and are out to prove that that they should be playing at this level.
Yeah, and when I look at a guy like Kirk Francis, I think that's such. I love that, right? I love the story of Gunner coming to Oklahoma State, you know, Gundy wearing 12 at OSU, and he played well last year. When he got into the game, Gunner played well, and he is tearing it up at Emporia. But I'll go back to when, you know, he first committed to Oklahoma State. I'm glad he was here. I enjoyed it. I loved covering him in high school, and I enjoyed covering him at Oklahoma State. I wish he would have taken one of his scholarship offers and gone and made a name for himself. I love the, like, there are preferred walk-ons at Oklahoma State that have turned out to be massive difference makers, right? You're losing to Boise State without Cale Kabanis, you know, in 21. And most of those preferred walk-ons that make an impact are going to get put on scholarship, and they're, but when you have smaller schools that extend offers and those kids are like, you know what, you're willing to take a chance on me, I'm going to take that risk. I'm going to accept the scholarship, and I'm going to go. And let's be honest, folks, okay? As much as, like, my mom works in the business school at OSU, but let's not get it twisted. a degree from Tulsa, it's a little bit better than a degree from Oklahoma State in terms of prestige. So if you can get a free education from TU, you should take that.
For sure, man. I mean, That was my situation in college. It was either pay my way and go to Oklahoma State where I was a fan, or get paid to go play baseball at Northeastern State and then eventually UCO.
Mm-hmm.
I chose the money route.
I will take that money. Real quick,
I'll take that. Thank you very much.
Let's take a look at the defense. Obviously, Colin Oliver goes down in the first half. Super disappointing. I think Colin is probably my favorite player on this roster, and certainly one of my favorite players that I've covered since I've started back in 2015. And the fact that he's going to be out for a significant period of time is I hate that for him. You know, he still has a year of eligibility. I don't know what he's going to do, because I don't know if the NFL knows what they're going to do with Colin yet. You know, is he big enough to be a defensive end in the NFL? Probably not. Is he talented enough to be a linebacker in the NFL? I don't know. So does he use that extra year of eligibility to try to get it figured out? I hope so. It's beneficial both ways, obviously. But I'll tell you this, I am significantly less concerned with that position based on the performance I saw from Obi Ezekpo on Saturday.
Oh, 100%.
Oh, man. 100%. That's the article I put up on Pokes Report last night is, you know, Obi Ezekpo proved against Arkansas he belongs at this level. It's a D2 transfer from Gannon, goes out there, records 9 total tackles, 3.5 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, a quarterback hurry, Big 12 newcomer of the week. I mean, are you going to get that type of performance every single week? Probably not, but you're going up against a really good SEC offensive line, albeit they were tired in the second half, and that's what you're doing in the second half. Yeah, I'll take that every single day. I would rather have Colin as the full-time starter, but I'm not as worried.
Well, and 100% agree with you. The other thing that performance did was that did not give opposing offensive coordinators any more sleep.
No,
because when Colin Oliver was coming after you, they had to scheme for him. Ozigbo having that kind of performance, they can't sleep on him. I mean, they can't just go, well, the right side, yeah, they're not coming off, you know, that side the way they were with Colin Oliver. They don't know. Tulsa's going to have to spend time on that side of the defense.
Yeah,
absolutely. And try to figure that out. You know, whenever they talked about they may have to do some scheme, I think Gundy may have been kind of some coach speak, but if you think about this, if you had to go four down and you had Jaleel Johnson on one end, you know, almost more your traditional two defensive tackles in the middle and then two defensive ends with Jaleel Johnson on one side and Walter Sheed on the other, that's formidable as well. So I think that this team having good athletes, recruiting really well these last few years, having a Walter Sheed come back, you know, stuff like that gives them options for at least lessening the blow that missing Colin Oliver for a while will give. But he is listed still, Zach, on the depth chart as the starter.
I think I would put my money on the opposite direction. Real quick here, I got a radio show I got to do in a couple of minutes. So let's work our way down this line here. Arizona State at Texas. It's pretty close. I'm going off ESPN.
Texas State, easy.
Yeah,
Texas State.
I'm going off ESPN bets, and it's Wednesday, but they have Arizona State 1.5. I think Arizona State is a lot better than we thought. I would take Arizona State to win.
I agree with you. I think they are too. I think they're even better than when we saw them. Was that last year with Dillingham out there? But I like Texas State at home on that one.
UNLV at Kansas. Kansas 7 points.
Oh, I don't know anything about UNLV, so give me Kansas.
Same. This is a good one here. Arizona at Kansas State. Kansas State 7.5.
I like Arizona to stay inside that. I think it's going to be a tight game. I've watched the Arizona games. They are all offense, no defense. But I don't know how good an offense Kansas State has. So I think that one's going to be tight. I'll take Arizona in an upset.
I was going to say, give me Arizona with the upset. Cincinnati at Miami of Ohio. Cincinnati 3.5 points.
At Miami, give me Cincinnati.
I'm taking the upset.
I think they're going to be bigger.
Taking the upset. Yep. North Texas at Texas Tech. Tech is 9.5.
Tech.
I'll take North Texas. I don't think Tech's that good.
I like it.
West Virginia at Pitt.
That's isn't that the backyard brawl?
I think so.
The name on that one. Give me West Virginia.
I'll take Pitt at home. That's me saying that West Virginia could be in the Big 12 championship. Utah State, Utah 20 points.
Utah with or without Cam Rising. I think they roll them.
I thought they would roll Baylor, so I would take the under, but I still have Utah. Air Force at Baylor. Baylor 15.5.
Ooh, give me Air Force to keep it tight with all the run. All the running.
I agree with you on that. I think Air Force with the upset. I don't think Baylor's. I really don't think Baylor's that good. Colorado at Colorado State.
I will be in Denver this weekend. Looked at tickets for that game. $280 was the minimum.
Yeah, no thanks.
But give me Colorado State.
I do too. I think Colorado's going to be 1-2 after this weekend. UCF at TCU.
Battle of the acronyms. Both 2-0. Give me TCU at home. I am down here right now, so I'm feeling kind of hometowny a little right now.
Sure.
Give me TCU.
I'll take UCF. Rice at Houston.
The battle of the city of Houston. Give me Houston.
I'll take.
They were okay against OU. Most conservative like fourth quarter I've ever seen from a quarterback.
I think Houston's smart. BYU at Wyoming.
One of my favorite atmospheres, my favorite stadiums is Laramie, Wyoming. Give me Wyoming.
That's a big upset. Wyoming is awful this year.
They are, but I love that stadium, man. You got to go up in the mountains to go play there.
I'll take them too. And then obviously Oklahoma State at Tulsa. OSU right now 19 points.
Yeah, give me OSU by a million.
Yeah, same. I would take the over there as well. So that's going to do it for the Pokes Report podcast. I got to get out of here. I got to go do a radio show and talk for 2 or more hours about sports. But that's going to do it. We'll talk to you next time on PokesReport.com.